All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, just want to remind you here about Advantage BMW in Midtown. You seek the performance, you find the luxury, you'll get that at Advantage BMW in Midtown. Go down there, see my friend Justin. Their service will be tailored to you at Advantage BMW Midtown. Excellence isn't just offered, it's expected. They'll dedicate to putting time into getting you into the vehicle you want. Get the perfect new certified pre-owned or pre-owned vehicle. It's AdvantageBMWHouston.com. That's Advantage BMW in Midtown, which brings us, well, he's played in the Premier League, La Liga, the Bundesliga. You know him now as the Seattle Sounders color man. You also see him on ESPN. He's a Hall of Famer. He's Casey Keller. He joins us now. Casey, thanks so much for coming on the program.
My pleasure, Glenn.
Well, listen, the good times rolling in Seattle with the CONCACAF Champions League. I watched all of it. It's fantastic. Before we talk a little bit about that, I just wanted to take you into Seattle as a soccer city, because I don't think anybody does it as good as Seattle when it comes to just the whole soccer community being weaved into it at every single level. And right. And I wanted to get some insight from you as a person that's not only played for the Sounders, grew up in the area. What's that common thread that bonds, you know, the high school game, the college game, the youth game, the pro game, the camaraderie around the fan base? Because not every city is capable of doing that.
I think the common thread is so early, this community started to play the game. I think when I was a kid, you're going back, 50 years, that everybody played. Everybody as a kid grew up being on a team for a period of time. I remember a story back in the players bar at Millwall when I first got to England in the early 90s. And I remember my wife having a conversation with some of the girlfriends and wives in the players bar. And I mean, so she would have been 22, 23 at this time. And you know, somebody had mentioned something about playing and whatever and Americans. And my wife was like, oh yeah, I played, 6, 7, 8 years as a kid growing up. And the astonishment from the wives and girlfriends of, not only, oh, that's crazy that you played, but why did you play? I mean, it was just something here in the Northwest that was just everybody played, women, men, girls, boys, everybody played. And that's really just translated through as their kids play, as they then started to watch games and be part of, obviously when the Sounders NASL had great following, then when it folded, the different incarnations. I remember going to Tacoma Stars games as a kid in the Tacoma Dome, and they were sold out. I mean, it was, it's just stayed within the fabric for 50, 60 years.
He's Casey Keller, and we're talking about Seattle. Let's go down to that first leg, and you were down there at Olympic Stadium in Mexico City. The fact that they claw back into that game, I don't think we can overstate the importance that draw ends up kind of being like a win down there, right, coming back to Seattle.
I think even the one goal, the first goal claw back was crucial. I know that away goals weren't necessarily part of that, but just that deficit going in, knowing that it was just a one goal deficit, but then getting that last minute, that other penalty that then, to your point, got to the draw, and knowing that Pumas had to come to Lumen Field and win the game, as opposed to coming in, scrambling a 1-0 loss and coming out victorious. And I think that was crucial. Also, I think it was the psychological side of things where, they almost felt that they had one hand on the cup already at 2-0 up at home. And then to have that all disappear so late in that match, definitely pivoted to the advantage to the Sounders coming back to Lumen Field.
Yeah, take us into the vibe since you were there. What was the crowd like at the end of the game? The players, I mean, the life must have just been sucked out of
it. It was. I think even the first goal was a hit, because the jubilance after the second goal, I mean, let's be honest, right after halftime, I mean, that was a spectacular header from Dineno. And And you thought, okay, this could spell trouble for the Sounders, the way this crowd was behind this team and the way things were going. But kind of on the run of play, the Sounders were in the game the whole time and were maybe a little disappointed to be 2-0 down. And so, you know, that's one thing. This Sounders side has a lot of resilience. They fight back so often, as again in league play this weekend proved. So it didn't surprise me that they didn't drop their heads. They found a way to get back into the game, and then it just absolutely deflated the crowd. The crowd was then, I wouldn't say that they were necessarily just furious at the referee because of the decision or whatever it was. I think it was just this collective disappointment that they let a massive opportunity go. I mean, Pumas are a big club that haven't had a lot of success recently. They really, you know, they were scrambling to get into the playoffs in winning a game after that match, just to even be the 12th best team in Mexico. So this was a huge opportunity that the fan base saw to relive some of that glory that club has had over the years and haven't had in recent history. And they just, you could just feel it evaporate from them.
Huge moment for MLS, huge moment for the Seattle Sounders, this region of the world winning the CONCACAF Champions League, Seattle over UNAM Pumas. We're talking to Casey Keller, Hall of Famer, United States. You know him from his goalkeeping days in World Cups with the United States as well. Is Brian Schmetzer an underrated manager? He's such a humble, kind of down-to-earth guy. I love his interviews on TV. He's brutally honest when he's interviewed on television. You don't really get the coach speak. The guys, I met him first with Fernando Clavijo, and he never said a word, really, when Fernando was coaching the Seattle Sea Dogs way back, another team in Seattle. And Brian was just always this quiet, very well-mannered guy, and now you see the fiery side of him as a coach. But is he underrated? You tell me about him.
I think the tricky part about Brian is, and I've seen this with a couple of other teammates that were one club guys who then coached at one club. They just don't have a large reach simply because they haven't bounced around to a bunch of different clubs and learned from, you know, and became known by those fan bases. So I think that everybody in Seattle understands what Brian brings because he's been here so long. It's just the case that he's underrated simply because so many other people around the country don't know. All you have to do is look at the success that he's had since he took over for Ziggy Schmidt. And it's obviously very clear that there's no reason to be underrated because he's been able to fill a Sounders trophy case in a time that obviously managers and clubs around MLS are extremely envious.
Is humility a lost art in the professional game now, through your lens from when you played to now?
It shouldn't be, but it sure seems. I remember having a conversation with one of my bosses at ESPN and kind of laughing a little bit while we were in the cafeteria on campus and just kind of talking about that. In some ways, ESPN, I was joking with him because I said, in a lot of ways, ESPN has been responsible for exactly what you just said. The guy that beats his chest and tells everybody how great he is the one that gets on SportsCenter. The guy that just does his job the right way, wins quietly, somehow he gets pushed aside. And for me, that's frustrating because I like to see success be rewarded. I like to see things being done the right way be rewarded. And unfortunately, right now we're in a situation where the jackass gets the media attention.
Yeah. Phones and technology are helping that as well. We're talking to the great Casey Keller and Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga, teams like Spurs, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Rayo Vallecano, Millwall, U.S. national team, you name it, he's been there. All right, so the second half of the Minnesota game, this looked like the MLS Seattle Sounders, kind of that we know, and you guys made that very clear on the broadcast. It was very evident to everybody. Do you get the sense now that they've been able to push the CONCACAF Champions League incredible, win over UNAM Pumas behind them now and get refocused on the league?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, I think so. I mean, I was talking to Schmetzer about it the other day, and I'm not sure if we alluded to it on the broadcast or not, but you show me another league where the cup final is in the beginning of the season. Yeah. Normally the cup final is a culmination of the end of the season where you're then, you know, winning the cup, finishing the league, or the league is already finished. And then you go on vacation and you come back the next year and have to refocus, where here it's the way that MLS, the season aligns with the rest of the world and everything. It's awkward that you not only sometimes are you preparing for the Champions League in your preseason, that you haven't even had a league game yet, and you're playing up against, you know, other rivals that are 8-10 games into their season, and you haven't even played yet. Your first game of the season that matters is a Champions League game, which is obviously difficult for MLS teams to start with. Then you go through this process, you win this thing, and then you're like, oh yeah, I still have 3/4 of my season left to get refocused for. And so, yeah, it is a tough ask when you just think, hey, we just won something historic here. And oh, by the way, you know, we still have the majority of our season left. So I think it has been a tough task. And obviously the game in Dallas 2 days after that showed. But I think Brian made a good point at halftime where that majority of the starters in that match hadn't played for 11 days. And you could see just that little bit of rust in the first half, and the intensity still wasn't quite there. Obviously the halftime speech worked, and I truly expect, you know, to see the Sounders race up the table. Will they go 10, 12, 15 games unbeaten? Well, we'll have to wait and see, because there's obviously a lot of parity in MLS, but I think we'll see the best of the Sounders now more consistently than we saw, at least in league form, that we saw at the beginning of the season.
Remember a couple of years ago when Greg Vanney boldly said, hey, look, we're not paying attention to MLS. We're focused on CONCACAF Champions League with Toronto. And everybody was like, yes, awesome. You know, we like this. And then, of course, they went on to have a really, really struggle of a season. I don't think they made the playoffs.
Right. And I think that's something that also is the next step for MLS, because I'm sorry, you don't see Real Madrid come in 10th place because they're in the Champions League final. You don't see that with Liverpool. You don't see that with the big clubs in the world. You have to understand that that's all part of playing for a big club, is knowing that you have to play Champions League midweek, travel, come back, concentrate on the league, because those drop points in the league after a big Champions League game might be the difference between you winning the league or not. So yes, I understand it's a little bit of a different travel dynamic in North America going down into Central and South America. I get that. But I think that's the next big step for MLS, that if you truly want to be a marquee player, there's no such thing as a day off. There's no such thing as you play in this competition and then we'll just kind of forget about this one for a while. And then we'll come back to this one. And then, oh, by the way, that one's done. Now concentrate. No, no, no. Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo somehow could play 65, 70 games a year, score 50, 60 goals a year, and not be like, okay, you just concentrate on this one performance. So that's the next big step. Congratulations to the Sounders for focusing on Champions League, getting over that hurdle, but it's one step in an evolution of MLS. If we want to be relevant with the rest of the big leagues in the world, then there's the next step.
Do we rely on that too much? You think the teams in MLS, it's a heavy schedule and, it's a long season. And, you know, sometimes I feel like that's a crutch and we hear a little bit too much about that.
I agree. I think sometimes if you're told you can't play a midweek game, all of a sudden you can't play a midweek game. If you're told you can, and you should be able to, then you probably will. I think the other thing, Glenn, that would make it very interesting for me is throw some real appearance fees and some bonus money at some of these games and see how many times
over the years, many times bonus money. That's how you get players motivated.
Well, I mean, it sure motivated Don Garber to get a bunch of expansion teams. He sure got a whole lot of bonus money for that. So, you know, it makes sense. It's part of pro sports. It's part of anything. If you say to a player, let's just say you're in Seattle, you got to travel to Houston, Dallas, wherever in August, play a game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's no financial bonus for you to then just stay at home with your family and not travel. And now I'm a little banged up.
My hamstring is bothering me a little bit more today.
Yeah, it's just human nature. Yep. Put something on there where you don't want to give your position away. You don't want to then say, then your wife knocks on the, you know, kind of looks at the next paycheck and says, you know, how come we're missing a whole bunch of money on this paycheck? Well, I just didn't feel like traveling. And, you know, this kid took my position because I was dogging it a little bit in practice. And I don't know, it makes pretty good sense to me that, that throw a incentivize some of that stuff. And you'll be amazed how those injuries don't seem to pop up midweek like they used to.
Yeah, and then you get your teammates pressuring you across the locker room saying, hey, you got to play today. We got to, you know, we got to win bonus money. We're talking to Casey Keller. Really looking forward to the Seattle-Houston game this Wednesday in Houston. By the way, you can catch it on AT&T Sportsnet. Of course, Casey and the Seattle crew coming into town, which is a good thing. It's kind of like a rare white tiger. We don't see too many commentators from other teams, but we'll be very happy to see you, Casey, and Keith Costigan coming into town. All right, the loss of Joao Paulo, I mean, that just broke my heart to see him and Miles Robinson go down, non-contact injuries on artificial surface. So this midfield now, Albert Rusnak, you know, you kind of look at Seattle and go, wow, you know, when Ladero was out, you got an Albert Rusnak in there. But how is Albert Rusnak's game changing through your lens when it comes to the absence of Joao Paulo?
Well, I think there was an idea that, you know, Ladero was going to be a little more advanced as expected. And then between Joao Paulo and Rusnak, they really felt that they complemented each other very well. And if he goes forward, great. Albert just stays back a little bit, vice versa, move around. I think now with this situation where Joao Paulo is out for the remainder of the season, you'll see, I think, Albert in some more advanced positions. And I think evident from the pass that he laid on for Christian Roldan for the first goal, in which Christian then got hit in the box and drew the penalty. There was less of that, I think, earlier on. And it was something that I think Albert bought into. You heard Brian Schmetzer talk about it different times, at least we have in the Northwest, that you know, Albert is here to win things, that he's here to be a part of something to win trophies. And if that means he has a little different role than he had at Salt Lake, so be it. He'll do what the team needs and how he best can complement the team. And does that role change a little bit now with the injury to Joao Paulo? Probably. And he's an intelligent footballer. He'll roll right along with it.
Casey Keller joining us here. Casey, back to that. I mean, at RSL, he was pretty much a free roll. And, you know, now all of a sudden you come into this cauldron here, or this concentric circle, the Seattle Sounders, where, you know, you're not coming in to be the guy above everybody. You're coming in to conform to Seattle. Yeah. And I'm sure Albert Rusnak knew that when he came, correct?
Well, and I think that messaging was very clear, and they wanted to make sure that he had bought into that before they made the commitment. And that was very clear from Albert. It was very clear, you know, what the expectations were and how they wanted him to play. Now, does that mean that it's going to be seamless and that it's going to happen instantly? Or is it also part of a little bit of a learning curve from Albert as well? Yes, but first and foremost, you need a player that's bought in for that. I think when you come in and, you know, I think the example of, you know, any team in MLS where when your designated players are some of the hardest working players in your side, it pushes the example to everybody else. It's always difficult when you have somebody coming in that's making 20, 30 times what a lot of other teammates are making, and they're just walking around like they're on vacation, and what example that sets for everybody else. But when you look at the Rui Diaz's and the Nico Laderos, and they're two of the hardest working players in the side, that just sets the example for everybody else. And then when Rushnak comes in, the example is already set.
Last one before we let you go. We can't let you sneak away without this one. You know, obviously the U.S. goalkeeping position, a little bit of a question mark right now with all your experience. Kind of give us your thoughts on where this lies, you know, ahead of Qatar coming up in the World Cup.
Well, it's obviously not easy, because if you go back, you know, certain years where you would have a wealth of experience and that experience of playing as well. I mean, there were times when, you know, you had four Americans starting in the Premier League, you know, from myself to Friedel to Tim Howard to Marcus Hanneman. And now you are more than likely going into a World Cup where you have nobody playing regularly for their club. And that's tricky. But in the end, Greg's going to have to make a difficult decision based on who he thinks at that time is the most capable of getting the results for you. It's not a case of, look, I got three, four guys. All right, who's in form? Who's shown the best in their time with the national team in recent or whatever? It's not ideal, but they're still, what are we, 5-6 months away, so a lot can change in that time period. It's a position that I think the U.S. has been so comfortable in for so long. The fact that this is a conversation right now, particularly when you have a player at Man City and a player looks like who's going to be at Arsenal, but then you have that dilemma where nobody's potentially playing. So, yeah. And I think we've seen performances where it looks like that position hasn't been getting regular game time. So that makes it a little bit more frustrating. And also, you know, it's not a terrible draw by any means, but historically, if the U.S. are going to be successful, they're going to need their goalkeeper to make a couple saves. So, and not make any mistakes. So that's the worry.
And it can certainly, you know, mask deficiency in other areas, or when you're under pressure in games. Obviously, you make a great point there with the past history with all U.S. goalkeepers. But if you saw, this also may open the door for somebody to jump in out of nowhere, maybe, potentially.
The toughest part
is that possible?
Is how often do you want to go into a World Cup with an untested goalkeeper?
Yeah.
So, you know, I know there was some talk, and Steph Fry's been in great form for the Sounders. But the question mark is, you got a 36-year-old with really no international experience, no real time with the squad. And then you're saying all of a sudden, okay, you're our guy. That's tough. So I get that. Yes, it very well could open a door, but somebody's going to have to kick that door open pretty quickly to give themselves enough experience to where you'll feel comfortable playing them, starting them in a World Cup.
Casey, listen, great interview. We really appreciate it. We'll see you when you get down to Houston. And thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your expertise with us.
Thanks, Glenn. See you this weekend. Or see you on Wednesday. Yeah.
By the way, did you ever keep that Hawaiian shirt from the
It's somewhere games floating around. Still a lot of good memories from my first ever work as an analyst at ESPN. You and I in Hawaii. Good time.
Yeah, not a bad run, Hawaii, right?
Yeah, good start.
Yeah, my time.
When the boss has asked, hey, you want to go with Glenn to Hawaii and call a couple games that nobody's going to watch? You're like, sure. Sounds like a plan.
That was great fun. Good memory, Casey. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Glenn.
All right, that's Casey Keller there. We'll take a quick break here. Hey, we're going to remind you about John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's Daspit Law. com. You give John and his firm a call at 713-322-HURT. 24/7 nights and weekends are going to work for you. Whatever type of accident you get in, car, boat, maritime, you might drive an 18-wheeler. It's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. They keep us on the air.